What do you think?
I think we're dead meat. Real dead meat.
You're dead meat!
Go ahead and laugh, you guys. If I ever find a little basis of business, you're dead meat.
Welcome to the Dead Meat Podcast, your horror safe haven. I'm Chelsea.
I'm James. We're married and we like to get scared together.
Yeah, this week we're talking about Cemetery Man.
Yeah.
Known in the original Italian as Della Morte, Della More.
Yes, Della Morte, Della More.
Yeah.
You're welcome, everyone.
I was going to say, you're going to have to explain why you picked this movie for this
I've been
this
pushing
week.
For this
You've
for
been
months.
Really wanting to cover this movie.
Yeah, I forget why it came floated back
was
up
it
to
the
my
new Blu-ray?
Probably.
Was that new?
Yeah, I think the new Blu-ray just came out and I snatched it up as soon as I saw that it was announced. This was a movie I watched a lot as a kid. You know, it wasn't like a Reanimator level favorite of mine, but it was a peculiarity that I really was happy to know about and like show friends. And part of
there's
that,
boobs in
there's
it.
Lots of
there's
it's,
a lot of
it's
boobs.
It's almost
in it.
Soft core at some points, but it's also its own weird fucking tone. It's a comedy. It's a horror. There's lots of gore and
the gore
practical
is great
effects.
In
it's
this
great.
Movie, yeah.
Yeah, it's Italian, but it's in English.
It's a zombie movie, kind of.
Yeah, so it was one of those movies that I found as a kid and was like, oh, this is different. I'm really into it. Also boobs. And
we're doing weird dubs in this, too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a co-production of Italy, France, and Germany, but like the leads are all British. Rupert Everett is the lead in it.
Well, I think the woman in it's Italian.
Oh, and isn't she Italian and Finnish?
Like Finnish Italian or something. Yeah. And a lot of all the like minor the other cast it's Italian.
Oh, they are. Okay.
I think so. Yeah.
I think Franco is also British.
His buddy. His friend.
Yeah. It's a weird fucking movie. Listen, if you want a movie that makes sense, don't watch this.
Don't watch this. Do you want a plot that makes sense? Do you want motivations that make sense? That this is not the movie for you.
No, it's a very surreal film. There's almost no structure to it. Things just kind of happen. The baseline reality is so fucking weird right off the bat. Like, we start this movie and it's about a gravekeeper who has to kill...
Played by Rupert Everett.
Yes. Which 35 in this.
Yeah, no, he'd already had a career before this movie, mm-hmm. which is so interesting. And apparently, I read the Blu-ray for this is really nice, by the way, and it came with this little booklet with an essay that's like
Who did this Blu-ray? Was it Severin?
I think it's a Severin Blu-ray.
God, man, fucking Severin, Arrow, yeah. Shout Factory, Vinegar Syndrome. Thank fuck for existing. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
For doing stuff
so
like
it
this.
Comes with an essay written by Claire Donner called The Last Great Italian Horror Film. And they talk about how Rupert Everett, yeah, had a career before this, has said before that he doesn't like horror movies because they don't have plots. But then he did this movie. I think because there was something about this that he respected and felt was important in terms of the lineage of it, like the Italian horror lineage, which
yeah,
is fair
it's,
and
it's,
true.
Directed by, is it
Michela?
Michela
Soavi. Mm-hmm.
And, who worked with Argento a lot.
Argento, I think he was also the AD or second AD on Brazil, Gilliam movie.
Yeah.
So, he worked a lot with Argento. I think that this essay talks a little bit about how he maybe saw Argento as a kind of like a mentor that he admired and worked really well with, but also maybe kind of a shadow he wanted to get out from under.
Sure.
To do his own thing.
Mm-hmm. It would be like, I don't know, someone always working with Wes Craven and then like trying to make their own movies.
Yeah.
As an American equivalent, maybe.
Sure.
Argento was so huge.
I wonder if you can compare. Michela Soavi is Nicotero to Argento's Romero. Yeah.
Ooh, okay.
Maybe.
Yeah. Only never found a Walking Dead.
No, not quite. I also was getting confused when I was reading the history of this, all the different, because this is like the onion peels of like how many things had to exist before this movie, because there's this book that was written that was then kind of shelved. Then this comic series was made. And then after this comic series, the book was then, I think, either, I forget if it was published or like just republished to capitalize on the popularity of that.
And the comic even had based its character's appearance on Rupert Everett.
Yes, but not the character that's in this movie. It's different character that looks, it is drawn to look like Rupert Everett. And that was this meta thing they wanted to do, is cast him because he already looked like this other character. Yes, it's all kind of confusing. And
just like this movie.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but if you do like weird stuff,
yeah,
definitely watch this.
And it's an Italian horror movie. It's not a giallo. If you're expecting that, that's not what this is.
No, and I had heard before we watched it, because, you know, I haven't watched it since I was a kid before this podcast.
They wanted to make it a giallo.
I just heard people refer to it as like a giallo.
No, it's
not at all. It's just an Italian
horror closer thing. To like a Peter Jackson horror movie.
Yeah, because it's got that comedic element and just the surreal.
The weird perspective shots sometimes you get.
Oh, yeah. Some of the direction is great. There's a lot of shots looking directly up and directly down, just to, I think, mimic the theme of we're in a cemetery. It follows a cemetery keeper who has to continually just kill people when they come back on like the seventh day. There's no explanation for why they come back.
Yeah, some people do, some people don't. There's no, if you're wanting consistent lore, you're not getting it here.
Yeah, literally the first scene is he's just on the phone. There's a knock at his door. It's a zombie, shoots in the head, and continues on his conversation. So the baseline reality of this movie is already at like a 9, and then it goes up to like a 12. Because you have this, he has like an assistant who can only say nya.
Nagi.
Yeah, Nagi, who is great. I always loved Nagi as a kid.
Yeah, he's kind of got a Three Stooges kind of, I forget which one's the bald one.
Curly.
That's Curly. Mm-hmm. I always mix them up.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
You didn't? Oh, I know that your parents wouldn't let you watch them.
That was when I was really little. Yeah. And, you know, they don't want me learning it's funny to hit people go to preschool and be popping kids in the face.
I can't believe.
No, I end up like, I just, Larry, Curly, and Moe, because Larry's the redhead. Uh-huh. Moe has the bowl cut. Yeah, but for some reason, like, it always seems wrong.
But you know Shemp and Curly Joe.
No, I know Shemp.
Okay.
Okay. I know Shemp.
There's a lot more than just the three.
Yeah.
But that's the classic line.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's Nagi is like mentally handicapped.
He's kind of a, like an Igor or like a, who's the, is Don Quixote, Pancho Villa, right? Is his little guy.
Yeah.
I mean, he's one of many in the long tradition of neurotic, thin protagonist and round, childlike little guy that follows the protagonist around.
Very much so.
Yeah.
It's these archetypes.
Yeah.
And so again, it's like, that's the baseline we're working with. And then you're going to end up with like an actress playing multiple roles.
Lots of doppelgangers.
Doppelgangers.
European movies fucking love doppelgangers. I just think of like Persona.
I mean, Vertigo. I mean, that's not European.
No,
but
Vertigo.
Like
for Vertigo is mentioned in this. In this booklet.
That makes sense.
Yeah, for sure.
Because again, because in Vertigo, it's a case of he loves someone and then he finds someone who reminds him of his love.
Right.
That's this over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I would say check this out. It's on Shudder. Wait, is it? No, we watched it on Blu-ray.
Yeah, we bought the Blu-ray.
Might be on Shudder. I don't
know if it's streaming or not.
See if it is, because it's fun.
The thing too about the weird structure and story of it is, because most movies tend to align themselves with a three act structure, you get a sense of where you're at in the movie and how much more is left. But when a movie abandons that completely, time just stops making any sense, which can be tough.
Yeah.
I sometimes get like thrown off by it and I don't know if I love it.
Yeah, you were off kilter in like the last half hour of this movie. You're like, wait, what is happening?
Yeah, maybe I'm just a square in that respect, because I sometimes just don't have the patience, you know? wish I did. It's cooler to have the patience for stuff like this. But I mean, that's a feature, not a bug, too, in a movie like this. And that's part of the philosophy of this kind of weird era of Italian filmmaking, is like these filmmakers believe that film is not beholden to the same kind of like story structure as a book or a play. And because film is a visual medium, it should be the priority to explore visually what's possible, even if that's at the expense of plot.
Which I like.
And which is like, I think it's a totally cool, like, philosophy, and I like it. I sometimes just, I don't know, maybe it's just the ever shortening attention span.
Well,
effect.
It's also, I think, the first time you watch something and don't know where it's going, it can be difficult to like be like, all right, where are we going to end up? And that anticipation can lead to kind of a restlessness. I think maybe if you watched this a second time and knew what was coming, it wouldn't feel as drawn out, because you'd be like, oh yeah, we still have the hospital massacre scene coming up.
So. Right. And in retrospect, there is kind of a structure, because we do have the woman come back three times.
Yes.
And so that does kind of create
she's
a
the
framework. So like knowing that.
The unnamed character, her.
Yeah, her, she. It'd be interesting to go back.
Anna Falchi.
Yeah.
She's one of the most gorgeous.
I mean, yeah, like, she's babelicious.
There's a reason she like captivates him.
She looks like she should have been in like those Brigitte Bardot French movies. Mm. You know, those 60s sexy French movies.
Yeah.
Where she's playing a woman who's married to like an older filmmaker and they just argue.
Yes. This lady apparently also, Anna Falchi, put some respect on her name, apparently reenacted. This is great to learn.
Oh, yeah. This is very specific. This is so weird that we watched this now, because James is in his Madonna hyperfixation kind of era, and I love it for him a lot.
Because I definitely watched her 1994 interview with David Letterman, all of it. Check it out. Watch it if you haven't. It's 16 minutes of just fucking off-the-wall shit that they got in trouble for, because she just swears so much. But apparently, Anna Falchi played Madonna in a parody of that interview specifically. That interview has its own Wikipedia article, by the way. Madonna on David Letterman in 1994 is a Wikipedia article. Go check that out. And she played, she did a parody of this, but in the real interview, Madonna gives her panties to David Letterman, and he like puts them away, and she keeps telling him to like take them out, and he's like trying not to get in trouble, so he's not. But I guess in this version with Anna Falchi, she took her panties off during the interview, gave them to the host, and he smelled them on the air, and it was a scandal.
Yeah.
Which like, obviously, but that's what we're dealing with here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The movie I was referencing was Contempt, the Godard movie.
Oh, Godard.
In case you want a random movie to watch.
One last thing I'll say about this movie is it should have had dick.
It should have.
It should have. With what it is. And especially they open it up to a scene. There is a scene where you and it would have made so much sense.
There's a lot of penis anxiety in this movie. A
lot. You do get Rupert's
butt.
Has
Rupert Everett, has he shown dick?
I feel the list of guys who have shown dick is small.
I feel like, I don't know. Maybe I'm just...
He's British, so the chances
that's
are
what I'm saying. I feel like if you're a European actor, there's higher chances that you've hung dong in a movie. But
yeah.
But. Not in Dunstan checks in, though, probably. Which he did right after this. Which is like, I know him from so much other shit, but the childhood me is always going to think of him as the rich guy who brings Dunstan to the hotel. He's the bad guy. He's scary.
He doesn't hang dong in that?
No, not in the children's film Dunstan checks
the
in.
The high-low of a Godard film you had to look up. And then Dunstan checks in.
That's a double feature no one's done before, is Contempt and Dunstan checks in.
Every time I hear Dunstan checks in, I think of... what's the Reagan movie?
Oh, Bedtime for Bonzo,
yeah.
I think.
Let's do a double feature of Bedtime for Bonzo and Dunstan checks
that
in.
That would actually be really good.
I bet people have done that before.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
God, what the fuck was I even talking about?
I don't know. We can talk about this movie, though, I guess.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's talk about this movie. It is interesting that when they were making this, apparently, they all kind of, like, everyone who came together to make this movie was like, this is the end of an era of filmmaking.
Like, oh, like they knew it while they were doing it?
Because it was a combination of a lot of things, apparently. There was this, just like in the United States, this kind of dip in people going to theaters. So weirder stuff that was being made had even less of a chance of being seen places at a certain point. These like weirder Italian, specifically horror movies, are only screening at certain theaters and they're harder and harder to seek out.
And by the early 90s, like Argento is making garbage.
That's another factor that is mentioned here is like the magic is kind of gone.
Like the Titan behind it has lost his touch.
You know, it's just not the same anymore. Politically, Italy's a bit weird too. In the 90s, this is like the rise of Berlusconi and stuff. Mm. And there's a lot more, I think there's a lot less tolerance for this kind of bullshit in the wider culture. So. Okay. There was kind of this sense of, like, this is our death knell a little bit, which is fitting for it to take place all in a cemetery. So it's neat. It was cool to realize that there are so many layers to this that on the surface I didn't, because I'm not as familiar with Italian film, that I didn't pick up on until I read about the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely a blind spot for me, especially once you get out of like 70, like giallo Italian horror. That's when I'm like, I don't really know.
Like,
much
I know
about
some
it.
Giallo, but then like we said, this is
like
not
getting
that.
Later. That's not really anything I know that much about. So this was definitely outside of my comfort zone, knowledge wise. Yeah.
Yeah, this we're in a cemetery. Our caretaker is Francesco Della Morte.
Yep.
Saint Francis of Death.
Yeah. And this guy is the most emo.
He's so fucking emo.
He's
dude.
So angsty. Like,
he's writing on LiveJournal.
Yes.
Like,
he leaves instant messenger away messages that make you concerned and maybe you call his parents, kind of. Emo, you know?
Yeah, I definitely wrote down some quotes, but I'll have to hunt them out throughout this of just how fucking emo he is.
Oh, yeah.
Just stuff about like, oh, living in the dead is the same. And
He's just, he's obsessed with death and he's kind of obsessed with this little world that he's made for himself. You can tell that the outside world freaks him out. Mm-hmm. He prefers the company of the dead, it seems like, because it makes more sense to him.
The dead and his nonverbal friend.
Yeah.
His only friend who lives below him in like a cellar.
And
basically.
Only says, nyah.
Nyah.
I thought he was like a little cat boy. Like, nyah.
A cowboy?
A cat boy.
Oh.
He's like a little cat boy.
You could stick cat ears on him, on Nyagi.
That would
be
adorable.
He hates the leaves. He tries to rake dead leaves and the wind blows them away. He gets real sad.
Yeah.
He's a very
Nagi's
simple man.
Nagi's cute. I like him. Mm-hmm. Nyagi played by I'm going to fuck this name up. I'm sorry. Francois Haji Lazzaro, who was a musician, like a super cool kind of punk musician, and has played, like, I think in this picture on Wikipedia he's playing a hurdy-gurdy, which is cool as fuck.
He plays a violin in this movie.
Yeah, he's playing this custom violin.
And you said he just passed away,
like, in February this year.
Wow, just last month. Jeez.
I think there were a few people. Yeah, he passed away he passed 2023.
Oh,
so it was a year ago.
Oh shit, did we include him on our in memoriam? I might have missed that one just because
this movie's obscure.
Yeah, I'm hoping more people check it out because I don't know how the fuck did I find this as a kid.
That is the biggest question I came away from this wondering. It's like how and like what video store carried this.
It had to have been one of those like local family. Independent. I don't think this was at Blockbuster.
No.
But that shows how many movies I watched as a kid, horror movies I watched as a kid, that I found my way to Cemetery Man.
I mean, the cover of this is cool. I can see browsing the horror section and having this cover stand out because it's the kind of statue of death.
Yes.
Yeah.
Who I wish was more in this movie more.
I'm a big fan of death in this. It's this cool skeleton puppet.
Yeah, really Francesco, like. He emo-ly narrates a voiceover explaining his situation. He tends to this graveyard. The dead return on the seventh night sometimes. The only way to stop them is to split their heads open.
Yeah, zombie rules.
Zombie rules, classic. You know.
The only visitor you get routinely at this cemetery is this old lady who is great. I love this character a lot. She likes to pinch Nagi on the cheeks.
She calls him cutie, and she calls Francesco engineer. A bunch of people call him engineer throughout. Oh, did you find a reason?
Yes.
Okay.
And I am ashamed that I did not catch this because it is a reference to Deep Red. Do you remember how the mom in that movie constantly calls the main character like, oh, your engineer friend, and he's not, he's a musician, but she's like super kind of spacey, and she's constantly saying that he's an engineer. That's okay. A reference to Deep Red. I know I'm ashamed that I didn't pick that up.
Okay.
Deep Red's great as well. Mm-hmm. We did a commentary track for it on our Patreon.
There's a V1 kill count script for it, but I got cold feet just because people don't like old stuff.
Be a good one for Mother's Day.
We're going to do Serial Mom for Mother's Day. Exclusive knowledge drop for you right there. Serial Mom coming this year on Mother's Day.
By the way, the old woman in this, if Google is correct, still alive. She is 98 years old.
Yeah, that's awesome.
That's cool as fuck.
Because she's literally in this movie. And she's, I think, like visiting her future gravesite.
Yeah.
And at one point she asks, like, which of these images do you think would go good on it? And it's like young her and old her. And he's like, both and then
good.
Later she dies and he comes out and she has both on her gravestone. It's real cute.
Just crazy that like she's still roaming the earth. You know,
she outlived Nagi.
She hasn't needed to go to her custom gravestone yet.
Yeah,
good for her. Then this beautiful woman with big bosoms comes into the cemetery to visit her recently deceased husband's grave, and she was married to an old man.
Yeah, but he was a tireless lover.
Yeah, apparently he fucked good. He had good dick, and she tells us all about it.
Yeah.
So,
because Francesco, he is hounding this woman. He is like, that is the most beautiful living woman I've ever seen.
Yeah, I don't like that he specifies living woman, but I'll let it slide. He works in a cemetery. He sees a lot of dead chicks.
Yeah, right. And he is just like hounding her.
You called him a horny shark.
Oh, yeah, because he literally, like, they're inside a grave. Him and Nagi are, like, digging, and he sees her, and he just, like, springs out of this fucking grave. He's got ups, man.
Unless I misinterpreted something, this dude does a high jump out of a grave. That's like his full height.
He's fueled by the horniness, man.
Nuts.
He is thirsty for this woman.
Yeah, and he tells her we have an ossuary. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, she's like ignoring him until he mentions this ossuary.
We got a room full of bones and shit.
It's a room full of bones.
And she's like, yes, that's what I want. And apparently she's very excited.
It's a very wet ossuary. It's like dripping wet bones in there, but she like it. She sniffing likey. Them cobwebs.
And you kind of put together that, ooh, maybe the reason that she liked being married to an fucking old guy is because that's kind of the closest you can get to fucking a skeleton.
Maybe, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
She want them skelly bones.
Yeah, so she gets all horned up in this ossuary.
But she'll only kiss him through their shrouds at first.
Yeah, she has like a shroud over her head, and then she puts a shroud on his head. It looks exactly like the painting. It's The Lovers by René Magritte, which was pointed out in this essay.
Oh, wait, who did it?
Magritte.
I think that inspired the shot in The Exorcist of him by the streetlight. I think another painting that he did inspired that shot. Would that make sense with his style?
I think so, because Magritte's like the guy with the hat and the apple, right?
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, I might need to do some ADR in The Exorcist kill count, but yeah, because I think inspired the famous shot of The Exorcist, like used on the poster.
That makes sense, like, because if you look at his paintings, a lot of them are just dudes with bowler hats.
Okay, yeah, I mean, the hat checks out.
Yeah,
so.
But the painting of The Lovers is this one.
See,
with
you
the
immediately
two.
Fucking clock this. I mean, and, like, I would never
it
know
looks,
that.
Look, I was an AP art student. Okay?
I know, that's why it's so useful to have you do film analysis. You're catching shit like this. That
there's
I would
like
never.
Another reference to a painting. Later to, God, I forget what it's called. Later, we see in the cemetery, there's like that pond with that weird kind of like miniature in the middle of the lake where it's like a building kind of on an island. Uh-huh. That's a reference to a painting as well that I can't think of.
Yeah, after they kiss through the shrouds, she like backs up and a skeleton rips off her shirt.
Yeah, I can't tell if it's the skeleton's doing it or if she's just kind of leaning up against this wall and oops, the skeletons are ripping off all her clothes.
Well, just her blouse.
Yeah.
She's still got her bra as much as it can do for her.
Yeah.
And then she scampers away. But not, she doesn't leave the cemetery because he finds her by her husband's grave.
Mm-hmm.
And because she doesn't want to keep anything secret from her dead husband, she's like, we can fuck as long as he can see it.
Yeah. As long as we're being honest to my dead husband about what we're doing. And so, yeah, they start fucking on his grave.
What are the little wisps?
They
never come back.
They're will-o'-the-wisps.
He's like, ignore them. They're Ionis fatuus.
Yeah, they're wisps. That's a thing.
Is that what's in Zelda?
I think there's probably wisps in Zelda. I think
there are wisps at some point, yeah.
Yeah, they're a thing.
They're like little blue lights. I think they're just styrofoam balls on strings that are on fire.
Yes, they are.
You can see fucking strings.
There's a few times you can see some strings in this, and it's really great.
Yeah, this movie's String City, and I'm so glad that this new Blu-ray didn't erase that.
No.
I would hate that.
Like, it was never meant to be watched in 4K like this,
yeah.
But I'm glad
that. The little wisps have strings.
There's a fly later that has a string on it.
The fly, for sure. The head that's moving on its own. You can see strings there, so that's fun.
It's fun.
Yeah. They are fucking on this gravestone. She's, like, sitting up, and there's, like, wings on a gravestone behind her that makes it look like she has wings.
I like that in this booklet it says that all the scenes in this that take place in the cemetery where there's either fucking or it's really violent, they shot all of those on a soundstage. Rest of it's in a real cemetery because they didn't want to. They're like, it feels not right to.
I'm shocked by the restraint.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's like going down on her and stuff. Like, this is. It's a
sexy
scene. It's pretty graphic. You get some little man ass in there.
Yeah, you get some man ass. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But then, oops, her dead husband decides this is when he wants to come back to life.
Yeah. He comes back and he bites her in the shoulder.
Yeah, and he says, that's life.
The dead husband says, that's life, while he bites into her shoulder.
Yep. Rupert impales him with a cross.
Like, the chief of police and the doctor come by and they're like, her heart stopped from fear.
Yeah.
And they also say that she died while lovemaking, so it couldn't have been you, gravedigger, because you're impotent.
So apparently it's this rumor around town that he's impotent.
Mm-hmm.
Also, everyone tries to really cover for this guy this whole movie.
Yeah, which, like, to an absurd degree.
Yeah.
But, by the way, I thought impotent just meant
you can't
you're
get
shooting
up.
Blanks. Oh, impotent means you can't get... Then what's if you're, like...
Sterile.
Oh, wow. My entire life, I thought that impotent meant sterile. Wow. Mm. Impotent mean you can't
perform.
Wow.
You
can't.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, floppy dick.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. I'm glad we all learned stuff on this podcast.
Hey, want to talk to you about our sponsor this week, Fume. Just like a zombie that keeps coming back to life and interrupting your erotic daydreams about the girl who visits your cemetery, bad habits can be hard to kill. Our sponsor, Fume, is here to be your friendly henchman in your journey to kick bad habits. It's not about giving up, it's about switching up. Fume takes your habit and simply makes it better, healthier, and a whole lot more enjoyable. Fume is an innovative, award-winning flavored air device. Instead of vapor, Fume uses flavored air. Instead of electronics, Fume is completely natural. And instead of harmful chemicals, Fume uses delicious flavors. Your Fume comes with an adjustable airflow dial and is designed with movable parts and magnets for fidgeting, which is helpful for de-stressing while you're trying to break your habit. I wasn't sure what to expect when I first got a Fume, but their flavor cores are super light and refreshing. It finally feels like spring outside, so I've got the sparkling grapefruit flavor core in my Fume. It tastes lovely, and the sweetness isn't overpowering. It's more refreshing, less perfumey. And Fume also just released a magnetic stand for your Fume, and we're losing it around the house because your cat likes to roll it off your desk like Lucy does. Start the year off right with a good habit by going to tryfume.com/deadmeat and getting the journey pack today. Fume is giving listeners of the show 10% off when they use my code deadmeat to help make starting the good habit that much easier. Apparently in the book version of this, he spreads that rumor himself around town.
Why?
Because he is kind of an exhausting person and wants to be different.
Okay. And is, no, that checks out. I get
you
it.
You know what I mean? Yeah, like, I'm so tortured and have a floppy dick. Pity me, I'm the cemetery man. We also learn that during their conversation earlier, he mentions that he has a biology degree. And after she dies, he's like, damn, I definitely lied to her that I have a biology degree.
Like, I
didn't even graduate high school.
Yeah.
And he says that his favorite book is the phone book.
Yeah, he says, I've only ever read 2 books. And only ever finished one, the phone book. Later, Nagi like burns old phone books because they get new ones, and he gets real mad at Nagi.
Yeah, he goes, stop me. I do love this. Nagi's burning these old, out-of-date phone books. He's like, what are you doing? These are classics.
That's also one of my favorite shots is like it's shot through the page of a phone book while it burns an iris, basically, that opens up to show him.
Yeah.
Like, there's some fun
shots
in
this movie. There's very cool shots in this, yeah.
So he's just sitting there waiting for her to come back. And she does in the ossuary. She like sits up. And I'm like, dude, you're in love with this chick. And honestly, for a zombie, she don't look bad.
She's fresh.
She's
least.
Fresh.
Yeah. Because in this, it is established that they're not like vampires where they're undead, but they're not actively decaying. Like these zombies, they come back, but they're still dead and they can start to... They'll start to rot.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
They usually look pretty nasty, but she's looking pretty fine still.
She's fine, yeah.
But he, I'm shocked, he shoots her in the head still.
Yeah.
Put her down.
Mm-hmm.
And he's real sad about that.
Yep.
And he's real emo.
Then we cut to this lunch or meeting with the mayor.
Yep.
And there are a lot of kind of parodies of like bureaucratic figures in this because we've got a mayor, we've got
the chief of police,
we've got
like a bureaucrat, his buddy Franco,
yes,
who just lives in this like
a civil servant kind of,
yeah, just stacks of papers and binders.
Yes, his
everywhere.
Office is just all unorganized papers. So yeah, it's his lunch meeting with the mayor. I forget what about. It doesn't really matter.
Well, I think he had been writing to the mayor about
the zombie problem. Yeah.
And was just getting ignored because he wasn't filling out the proper forms.
Right.
So I think he's meeting the mayor to try to get that resolved. But the mayor has his teenage daughter there. And
Valentina.
And Nagi takes a liking to Valentina in like an innocent way.
Yeah. He thinks she's pretty. He gets.
She keeps calling him it, though.
She does call him it, and it's uncomfortable. And he gets nervous and throws up all over her. And I was honestly about to throw up too, because the shot of the initial, the establishing shot of this lunch meeting is the most nauseating thing. And I don't get motion sickness from films. I remember when Cloverfield was in theaters and there was a warning when you went to buy tickets that like this movie is shaky, mm-hmm. people get sick, heads up, no refunds, right? But this shot, for some reason, last night, I was like,
because they're sitting at a circle table
this.
And the cam op is just walking around
in
them in a circle without a steady cam.
No steady cam.
It is just
no
like
track,
jostling.
Nothing. It is just like, and oh, it's just, it sucks to watch. It's, I'm sure someone will be like, it's on purpose.
No.
And it's,
what, it's weird though, because there are smoother circling shots in this
oh,
movie.
Oh, yeah. For some reason, this shot.
Maybe
just,
they just left the steady cam at home that day and were like, it's fine. We'll just get
it's
it.
Fine,
and it's
yeah.
bad though. It's
yeah.
bouncy.
So Valentina gets barfed on by Nagi.
She falls on the ground covered in puke, and then a motorcycle gang rolls up.
Claudio, right?
Claudio rolls up to her, yeah. and she's like, take me away. And she, covered in puke, hops on the back of this motorcycle.
Yeah, and not like big motor. This is like little Italian motorcycles.
Yeah.
This is like, what do you call
it? One step up from a Vespa.
Yeah, this is, I have Italian family who like, they still live there. They don't speak a ton of English. We're friends on Facebook. All of the pictures they post are of them biking around like this on the tiny little bikes. That is a thing. Everyone in Italy is just constantly riding bicycles, from my impression anyway.
And this bike gang goes speeding down these like cliffside roads, and they're riding around, and then
this is so good. Man, this is when like I was enjoying this movie, and then like stuff like this happens and I'm like, oh yeah, okay, this is why like this movie's got the sauce, because they just get crushed by a bus.
A bus comes like over a hill, runs into them.
A bus full of nuns and Boy Scouts.
Yes.
Which is fucking hilarious.
And you see Valentina's head get crushed by those. It's like Toxic
Avenger.
It's
not Valentina.
Maybe.
It's, I think it's, is it Claudio?
Oh.
Because Valentina, or no, maybe it is Valentina.
Because
she's like
her head
stitched
back together.
Yeah. You're right. You're mm-hmm. right.
You see her head get run over by like Toxic
like,
Avenger
more
style.
Than once. Because yeah. the front wheels hit it and then the back wheels.
And then the bus goes off a cliff. Unfortunately, we don't get
don't,
a explosion.
I think that's the limit of the budget for this.
Yeah.
So I will dock some points. We don't get an exploded bus. We do get a reaction shot of a horse.
That's true.
Who sees it happen? So then we get a funeral, a massive funeral, because
for
not
all the Boy Scouts.
For all the Boy Scouts and the nuns. And
they're singing a song about never should have gone on the Boy Scout picnic. Now I'll never go again, or something like that.
So crazy.
Valentina's in a glass coffin, like a fucking fairy tale.
Yeah,
princess.
Like Snow White or something. Mm-hmm.
With her head sewn back together.
It's kind of, I mean. Later, Nagi does, she reanimates, and he kisses the coffin, so it is a little bit of a Snow White.
Yeah, he's waiting for her to reanimate, and when she finally does, he, like, breaks in the glass coffin, and just glass shards go all over her face.
And then he just pops her head right off.
He accidentally rips her head off, but her head is then talking, and he sets it on the ground, and so the actress can, like, have her head through a fucking thing on the floor. And then she likes him and gets a kiss from him, and he takes her home, and he puts her inside his TV that Francesco shoots with the headshot out with a gun. So she lives inside his TV.
Yep.
Later.
His decapitated zombie child bride. Mm-hmm. Listen, problematic age gap. She is, like, 15.
But, like, mentally... he's kind of there.
Yeah, he's childlike.
He's childlike.
It's so funny. I did laugh a lot at this essay pointing out that unlike Francesco, Nagi prefers a woman's brains over her body because he's happy with just the head.
I will disagree with that when we get to the second incarnation of her. Although I guess, but I don't know. We'll see in a
okay,
second.
Okay, yeah, we'll get there.
Yeah.
I do have to point out, though, that before this TV is destroyed, I forget why Francesco shoots the TV.
Because it's when Nagi's watching TV. He's watching War Blob.
I was going to say War Blob, which, fun fact, War Blob was a real program.
No shit.
It was a satirical news program, like a
called War Blob?
War Blob, yeah.
And he's watching that eating spaghetti?
Yep. Now, okay. Dude.
That's not me being racist. He's eating spaghetti.
Yo, Nagi's eating lots of spaghetti. I mean,
with
he's,
bananas in it.
That's
cut up
disgusting.
Bananas.
Aside from the bananas and the spaghetti, which is fucking gross. He's like a garbage disposal. It's just, you know, because he even says, Francesco even says, like, well, I guess it all ends up in the same place anyway. But living the dream, honestly, eating spaghetti, watching my new satire programs.
War Blob, yeah.
War Blob. Yeah, he's got the right idea.
No,
honestly.
Francesco shoots that TV out because it's when all the Boy Scouts start coming back, and so there's a bunch of
it's a
zombies
collateral damage.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Oh, no, it's because he's done shooting them all, and then someone screams on the TV, and he turns around and shoots it, thinking it's another zombie.
You know this film better than I.
There's one chick who's real sad that Claudio is dead. She's real horny for him.
Yeah, apparently she was, I think she was his betrothed.
Although the mayor's wife is like, no, Claudio was going to.
Oh, that's right. Yes, the mayor's daughter was technically Claudio's betrothed.
Okay.
But this other girl also was in love with Claudio.
Yes.
And she comes to the cemetery crying for him. Claudio resurrects, he comes back to life, and I think he's got my favorite kind of zombie look in this
great
whole thing
here. Yeah,
he is a cool, I mean, he's a biker zombie.
He
which,
rides his motorcycle out of the grave.
Yeah,
it literally looks like the Bat Out of Hell album cover.
It's fucking awesome
in front of the moon.
I wouldn't be surprised if it's a reference.
It's gotta be.
I think
it's so similar.
It's so, it even is kind of framed. I'm looking at it looks very similar to that, especially with There's look at graveyard. The grave. Yeah, the gravestone
and graveyard down there.
It has to be a reference.
And look, there's the wings.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. The kind of angel of death statue back there.
Yeah.
So he blasts out of this grave on his motorcycle. And so not only, you know, you're already starting off with biker zombie, which is cool. That's like a cool zombie. he has like his helmet on, and he has embedded in his eye socket is like a digital clock display. I'm assuming from like the front of his bike.
I get, yeah.
Or I'm not sure.
But it keeps blinking green.
It's really cool. It keeps blinking like at the time.
Yeah.
And it just looks
in his eye socket. It looks really cool.
I love it. It's giving me Tank Girl a little bit. Like this feel, he could be like a Jamie Hewlett kind of drawing.
And then he finds them when Claudio is eating her.
Yeah, and she goes, "Let Claudio eat me, god damn it."
So please don't. He's only eating me. I should be able to let anyone eat me who I want.
Yeah, it's a woman's right to choose to be eaten by a biker zombie boyfriend.
Francesco doesn't agree. He shoots Claudio, and the bullet also goes through her head.
So yeah,
he
accidentally
kills a living person.
Right.
He feels bad, but then he says, "The living dead and the dying living are the same."
Yeah, this is when the lines start to blur for him, and he even decides later, you know what? I spend all this time having to shoot these dead people in the head. I'm just going to get ahead of it and just kill people in the first place by shooting them in the head.
Or at least this is the first time where he's like, that thought occurs to him.
Yeah. That's when we're starting to get to that point. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, so Nagi's hanging out with his zombie head child bride. Francesco doesn't know about her. He's doing this in secret. But then he's just trying to, you know, live his life, and her comes back.
Yeah, the hot chick, she comes back again.
Looking way nastier.
She's gross. And I mean, it's cool. Again, some very cool makeup. And the zombies in this are neat because they're not
uniform?
Yeah, but they're not like super gory zombies. They look very natural. Like they have branches and stuff coming out of them.
Yeah.
They're like almost starting to become like tree.
Yeah, they're very earthy.
They're like thorny kind of. It's neat. It's a cool take on the zombie idea.
Yeah. And now I'm like, maybe not on this one.
She does look stinky. I don't know about it.
They're kissing though.
Yeah.
And she bites his shoulder.
Yeah.
And then Nagi
then
Nagi kills her, and he realizes, wait a minute, people don't come back twice. Whoops.
She wasn't dead the first time.
And when he shot her in the head.
Yeah.
He just killed her. She was just like out. Mm-hmm. Or whatever. Which is weird because he had professionals telling him that she died of fright. I guess they're just bad at their jobs.
I guess so.
But
that's a running thing anyway.
Yeah, the mayor literally at his daughter's funeral is like, and she died right before the next election.
Yeah.
And then he's like, should we campaign with a picture of her saying, vote for a man who's lost everything except for this election? Or like,
yeah,
if you've lost someone, vote for someone just like you. But yes, he realizes that he accidentally murdered his love.
Yeah, I think that incompetence is definitely part of this movie's commentary and beef with Italian politics. I don't know a ton about it, but this is like Berlusconi. I looked, he was prime minister starting in 94. He was prime minister a few times, and like all I knew about Berlusconi was
his like affairs.
Yes, yeah. His many scandals, the infamous Bungo Bungo,
that's right.
Stuff and he, I think, before he was prime minister, was almost like a Trump kind of billionaire, just rich guy that becomes a politician, if I'm wrong. I'm sorry, I don't know. Tom,
yeah, hit us up, Italians. I know there's got to be some of you.
But that's definitely being poked at in this movie, for sure.
So, yeah, this is when death. Oh, yeah, this is the death.
Yeah.
The skeleton.
This is when death appears to Francesco and is like, hey, you keep shooting all these dead people.
They're mine.
Why don't you go and just kill living people instead? I'm not really clear on what
that's
death has
what
a
says.
Problem with.
Yeah, I think he just wants Francesco out of his domain.
Yeah.
But it's also, you know, Francesco's subjective experience as he unravels. after, especially after having just learned that he killed the love of his life.
Yeah. So he goes on a little killing spree.
He goes into town and he shoots a bunch of guys who have been making fun of him this whole time.
Yeah,
time
whenever he goes into town, they're like, oh, it's the guy with the penis that doesn't work. Look at this fucking asshole. So he goes and kills these guys.
Yeah, shoots seven people.
He is making pew, pew noises
with
his mouth.
Yeah, while he's firing his gun.
I love so much we haven't pointed out yet that the like inspector who comes over, the police, is it the police chief?
Yeah, the police
chief. He looks like Italian Loomis.
Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing how universal that guy is. Also, the actor playing him,
he got McCarthy era.
He was on he was blacklisted during the communist witch hunts in Hollywood, but he was a screenwriter. He wrote The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. God, there's so much. Like, you click on his Wikipedia and just scroll, and it's like...
What's his name?
Mickey Knox. Fun fact, in popular culture section of his Wikipedia, filmmaker Quentin Tarantino named his lead character portrayed by Woody Harrelson after Knox in the film Natural Born Killers.
Oh, wow. Mickey and Mallory Knox, yeah.
Yep, named after Mickey Knox. But yeah, holy shit, this Wikipedia... Anyway, how did he get involved in Cemetery Man? Who's to say?
Who fucking knows, man. But he visits and he's like, where were you last night? A guy you drove into town driving your car and he killed seven people.
And Francesca's like, sleeping?
And he's like, well, I don't think you did it. I think your assistant did it.
Yeah, because he looks exactly like you.
So he goes downstairs to where Nagi lives and he sees... the mayor's there too.
Yes, he's got the mayor with him.
Yeah, so they go down. The mayor goes downstairs because he hears his daughter.
Yeah,
calling for him, and he finds her head in a TV.
This is the reveal of now that the head is in the TV. This is honestly such aesthetic.
Nagi's spinning a disco ball with lights flashing all over her.
This scene out of context is very much like Lisa Frankenstein-esque kind of. I don't know how to discuss it. She's got like a veil on and she's in this, her head's in this TV set. And yeah, Nagi's spinning around a disco ball and she's singing. And honestly,
she's singing.
It's great.
It's awesome.
It's a lot of fun.
She tells her dad that she's going to marry Nagi. He says no. And he says over my dead body, which is of course her setup.
Don't
want to be like,
say that.
She's like, well, we can do that. And her head flies out
this
of the TV.
This is so great.
And starts nomming on his neck.
This
awesome.
Is some Peter Jackson shit. Because there's a POV shot from inside her mouth as she's flying out of the TV. So you see, it's like that shot in Little Shop of Horrors. The big, I'm sure it was a big set of teeth that they made to put around the camera. It's so cool. But yeah, now the mayor becomes a zombie. He's pretty rascally. He's climbing shit.
Yeah, he's like climbing a ladder to get out of the cemetery, I guess. And Francesco's like, get out from there.
And he's like,
but I'm the mayor. And then he just shoots him in the head.
And then we got a new mayor. New mayor, kind of hot.
Oh, yeah?
He seems like he's a different kind of, he feels a bit more authoritarian, wealthy.
He's no nonsense.
Yeah, he's not the kind of mayor.
He's not gonna have sex parties.
Maybe
he'll keep them on the low.
Yeah, I feel like there's two kinds of mayors. One is this new guy where he's like a wealthy guy becomes mayor. He's got like, you can hear his helicopter. He's got like a whole squad with him. Mm-hmm. Then there's the other kind of mayor who wears a sash that says mayor.
It's Mayor
on
Quimby.
It. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. First mayor is Mayor Quimby. Yes. Second mayor is
Bloomberg.
Yeah.
Those are the two types of mayors.
Is mayor from Jaws, he's more Quimby.
He's a Quimby,
yeah,
for sure.
He's more Quimby for sure. His outfits are the best.
They're really nice.
They're really good.
Yeah.
New mayor introduces himself and his assistant to Francesco.
Yeah, his secretary. Oh, and it's
Anna, what's her name, Anna Falchi.
Yeah,
the same actress who plays the love of his life.
Yeah, so it's her again. It's her doppelganger.
So she comes back to the cemetery and is like, I feel like I've been here before. I feel like I've always loved you. My only problem is I've heard the rumors around town. Are you impotent? And he's like, well, actually, I'm. And she's like, I can only love an impotent man.
Yeah, I'm terrified of penises. I have a phobia of penises. And I need to be with a man who has a floppy, floppy dick.
And he's like, that's me.
That's me. I have a floppy dick.
And I'm like, dude, she's going to find out. But he's already thinking ahead of me, man. He goes to the doctor and he's like, I need you to cut it off.
Take the whole thing off.
And the doctor's like, why? It doesn't even work. Everyone knows you're impotent. Or like, no, he's like, everyone knows you don't have one already. And this is when he stands up and drops trow.
That's right. Yeah. I think the rumor is like
that he's a eunuch, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know. Maybe it changes. I don't know. Like,
yeah.
Depending on who you ask.
But he stands up and drops trow, and the doctor's like, I guess you have one. And this is when they should have shown dick.
This is when they perfect opportunity to show dick. Yeah.
Like,
you gotta show he has one.
Yeah.
But then he's like, well, okay, I'm not gonna chop your dick off.
He said he's not feeling up for it today.
Yeah, he's not in the mood to do it today.
He almost does. He has like giant shears.
Yeah.
But he doesn't.
He says, I've got this, like a injection.
He's got a giant vial of this like amber colored liquid.
Yeah.
And it'll make it seem as though you've never had one, and it's temporary. It's just for a month.
Yeah, like Herbert West temporary dick shrinker.
Dick be gone?
Yeah. I don't understand how it's supposed to work. This movie doesn't either. It's fine.
So he injects that.
Then he goes back to the graveyard where she's there, and
this reveal is interesting and.
Takes this movie to a very weird, dark place.
But also, this is earlier you had said the brain versus body thing. See, he's so in love with her, and it's not about sex, apparently, because he's willing to cut off his dick to be with her.
Sure.
So it's not a matter of, like, I need to fuck her. He's so in love that he wants to be with her that he will cut –
Yeah, sure.
So that's the one that throws me off. Okay. I don't get this guy, to be honest. I don't understand his thing.
No, I don't understand
it
either.
Okay,
yeah. So we're about to go to a very dark place. So just hang in there. The woman says, hey, so just kidding. I was actually raped by the mayor, but I kind of liked it. And then we had sex a second time, and now we're in love.
And I'm cured of my fear.
And now I'm not afraid of dicks anymore. Lot happening in like 10 seconds of we're just like, what? We're watching this going, oh, whoa, 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 whoa. Like every other thing she says, we're like, Jesus Christ.
Literally, Chelsea basically quoted the movie right there.
Yeah, it's a lot. So now they can't be together because he made his dick disappear.
Yeah.
And I guess he can't be like, actually, I lied to you. But I mean, she's in love with the mayor. I think she said they're getting married or something.
Yeah. But they can still be friends. And the mayor knows. So it's all good.
Right.
It's kind of like how
the dead husband knew. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So he's all depressed. He goes to a bar and is sad and drinking by himself. And that's when he meets Magda and Laura. Laura is once more the third iteration of the hot girl. And they're like the college girls in Love Actually. Do you remember that with January Jones where they're like, we're hot college girls who show up at this random tiny bar. Come back to our house with us.
Wait, January Jones is a hot college girl?
In Love Actually, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
No, I don't remember.
You gotta watch the rest of that movie for that part, unfortunately.
But. Yeah, that's the problem. Yeah. Is speaking of problematic rape stuff, rapey stuff, isn't that the movie where like Billy Bob?
Where he's the president of the United States,
and then she gets
States?
In trouble for it or yes. whatever, and has to apologize. Yeah. That's all I remember. I've seen that movie once.
Yeah.
That's my takeaway, and I was like, this movie fucking sucks.
it's not good. The We Hate Movies episode on Love Actually is very, very
ooh,
funny,
that could get me to watch it.
Yeah.
If we watched it and then did that.
We'll wait till Christmas.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So he goes back to their house with them. They're college students. He has sex with Laura, and apparently, because he tries to explain, no, I'm like a Ken doll down there, but apparently not.
And that cut to them falling back in bed and her being like, I don't think your medication worked.
Yeah, so I guess it wore off. Dude, I don't know.
And they're,
you can't spend too long thinking about it.
She's saying she loves him, that they'll be together forever. She wants him to stay the night. And then he, like, goes downstairs to, like, wash up or something.
And get, yeah.
Like,
some... And Magda, the other girl's like, okay, that's $100.
Yeah.
And he's like, what? He's no, like, but she said she loves me.
Oh, $150.
Right, yeah. So she's doing that to pay her college tuition. Apparently, he feels betrayed. So he goes back upstairs, picks up a space heater, and puts it in the bed and sets the bed on fire, and then the house on fire.
He murders these women because he got bamboozled and they're sex workers and he's mad about it.
Yep.
So he just lights them all on fire.
Dudes hate being bamboozled.
So now, what? He's like fucking donezo, right?
Oh, yeah.
He's fucking gone.
Yeah. He gets back to the cemetery. The investigator's there and is like, hey, so where were you last? You know, we're doing this again. Where were you last
Someone
night?
Someone killed these three guys.
By the way, there was a remnant of a burnt check found at the crime scene with your signature.
For note for sex work.
Yeah. So, but you know, this guy who looks exactly like you confessed to all your crimes, and he's in the hospital now in a coma, so you're fine.
After killing his wife and daughter.
Yes.
Because it's his buddy Franco. Who we met once, and then he was on the phone with, and he had, like, written or something about, like, oh, you'll grow tired of your wife and child at some point. So I guess Franco really took that to heart, murdered his family, and then took the blame for these other murders that Francesco has been doing. And then wound up in the hospital. I forget how, but he's like in a coma. So Francesco goes to the hospital and is sitting at his bedside, his buddy Franco's bedside. He's like, why are you stealing my kills, dude?
Yeah.
And then a nun walks in and asks and tells him he can't smoke in here. So he shoots her in the face.
Yeah.
And then a doctor comes in and is like, sister, why are you on the ground? And then I think he's like, she's resting. And then he shoots him in the face.
Yep. Then he shoots another nurse.
Uh-huh.
It's a lot. It's, it reminded me.
You audibly laughed at the nurse getting shot.
It's just
because it comes out of fucking nowhere.
It's out of nowhere, and it's just such a funny rule of threes thing.
And I think he's like, shut up. Like, yeah. His delivery of shut up. And before
and
the
then
kill.
He, is it Franco? The wakes up in from his coma,
mm-hmm.
And he yells, "Go away!" With this really dramatic zoom out. It's so cool
because he says that he doesn't know Francesco. He doesn't know who he is.
Yeah. It's confusing. It's fine. It's okay if you don't know what's going on.
I mean, it's and like this in most other movies, this would be a very dark, like falling down type, you know, snapping, killing random innocent people. But this movie is so absurd.
Yeah.
That it's I don't know how to take it.
The reality is so weird. It does remind me a little bit of the ending of American Psycho,
yes.
Where he is, Patrick Bateman is basically like crying, telling his lawyer, like, I did all this stuff. I'm the one who did it. And then he's told, no, this other dude was arrested for it. And it just the idea of him getting mixed up with all these other guys, and he can do all this fucked up shit, but it's just so unremarkable in the grand scheme of the world that he lives in. And that's also kind of, I think, why Francesco's freaking out in this movie. It's like he's trying to do all this stuff, but
he has no purpose.
He has, yeah, exactly.
His job was to kill zombies, and then death was like, hey, stop.
Yeah.
And it, like, he had no love or human connections until a woman who he accidentally killed, and then just kept seeing her,
yeah,
over and over.
Yeah.
But yes, as he's like leaving this room, everyone in the hospital is in a panic, and the detective guy sees him as like, oh, Francesco, there were more murders upstairs. The killer's running loose. And then Francesco like holds up his gun. He's like, oh, good. You have a gun. You can protect yourself. And then he just keeps.
Yeah. Just no matter what he does, he will get no recognition or credit for any of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. So he tells Death, the skeleton, that he quits. You can't fire me. I quit. So he quits, and him and Yagi drive away. And apparently this is, we have kind of a little Lord of the Rings moment where they pass the Buffalo, the city's Buffalo, and they say, this is the farthest we'll have ever been.
Yep, this is it. This is the farthest we've ever been.
Yeah, so.
And he's like, through this tunnel is the rest of the world, and they drive into a tunnel.
Yeah, it's like they're going to Toontown.
Yeah.
And Roger Rabbit. But when they get to the end of the tunnel, they break because the road just kind of drops off.
Yeah, the road just
there's
ends
just nothing out there.
And he gets out and he's like, I knew it. There was nothing outside of the city. Like,
yeah.
There is no rest of the world. Yeah. There's just mountains. It's like beautiful landscape.
Yeah.
When he slammed on the brakes, Nagi hit his head and is like bleeding and is maybe brain damaged. But he comes out and like sits on the cliff with him. And then Nagi says, can you take me home?
Yeah. And then Francesco says, yeah. Yeah. And then that's the end of it.
No, no. And then it like zooms out and it's a snow globe.
Oh, that's right. Yes, we're in a snow globe.
Because it started to snow on them.
You're lying.
No, dude, I'm not lying.
We're in a snow globe,
baby.
We're
in a snow globe, man.
We see the snow globe in the beginning, too, but, you know, I didn't think anything of it.
And, yeah, it, like, starts to snow, and it's, like, soap flakes, and then it zooms out, and it's a snow globe. His whole existence is, I don't know.
But it's interesting, this essay about this movie points out that this is kind of, like, the metaphor. It's the end of this era of film. Maybe the weird kind of existential, like, what was all of this for kind of thing. This was our weird little bubble of art. What did we do it all for, you know?
There's a nice little article about this on Medium by Nat Bremmer, the Puppet Master guy.
Yeah.
I read that. It makes sense that he really likes this because yes. Puppet Master is very Italian-inspired, yeah. Especially the first one. So he's a big fan of this and just... One of the things he mentions is how seeing the same woman over and over is like a common thing for people who maybe had one big relationship early on in their life, and every new one they keep comparing to that first one, the one that got away.
Yeah.
Like they'll always compare like the new people to that, chasing after this thing that wasn't ever really real or that deep to begin with.
Yeah. And it also reminds me of how sometimes celebrities, if they've had a lot of breakups, it's so funny whenever you can tell someone's got a ton.
Yeah.
And their exes all look the same. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. That's Cemetery
that's
Man.
That's Cemetery Man.
Della Morte, Della More.
If you like practical effects.
Yeah, those like all the heads getting shot and like blown up and crushed and shit.
It's really fun.
And some of them don't look great.
No, but that's why it's fun.
Like, yeah, the daughter's head at one point just looks bad when it's not the actress poking her head through a thing, but
yeah,
whatever. It's so fucking fun.
Yeah. If you like the kind of Peter Jackson or even like Sam Raimi kind of, you'll like this, I think.
It's that like slapsticky humor, very dark, like black humor.
Yeah. That's an interesting thing. I think people often assume incorrectly that a foreign horror movie is just because it's a foreign film, it's going to be a classy affair or that it's going to be pretentious or boring. But often that's where you'll find the sleaziest shit, you know? Like, this is just...
And this could have been a pretentious movie.
Totally, yeah.
But the tone of it is so not.
No, yeah. It's very bizarre and, yeah. Definitely feels like a passion project.
Yeah. It, like, if you're like us and you've seen a lot of horror movies and you're like, what else is out there that I haven't seen... Watch Cemetery Man. It's something different. It's unique. It's definitely worth a watch. Yeah.
Cool. I guess that's that for this week. I'm hoping next episode, if we can get it to work correctly, I really want to post our live show. Because we're doing our live show on April 14th. We'll be reviewing The Crow. I really want to be able to post that to the channel. Fingers crossed, because if we can't get that recording to work, then I don't know what we're doing for that week of the show.
Yeah.
So bear with me. It's a very busy spring for us because we're out of town for a while.
We were just at Horror Hound in Cincinnati last
Cincinnati?
Week. Cincinnati?
You said Cincinnati.
No,
you totally said Cincinnati.
We were just at Horror Hound in Cincinnati. last week, and then this weekend was our one weekend home because a week from recording this, we're in Tampa for Spookala, and then Astronomicon in Livonia outside Detroit. Mm-hmm. So after that, I think we'll have some time to just like chill and just like get back to the regular schedule of work. But right now it's a matter of get all the work done before leaving, because we can't really work too much on the road. And because we're not coming home in between Tampa and Detroit. We're visiting my mom, who's in Tampa. So it's like con, visit, con, live show, then we're back. Mm-hmm. It'll be nice when we're back from that and can just get to a more stable swing of things. But until then, we're...
If you want to come to the live show, which you should, mm-hmm. our live show in Detroit, Michigan, April 14th, we'll be talking about The Crow, the original film, not the new one, which has not come out yet. I'll post a link in the description where you can get tickets.
At the Masonic Temple, mm-hmm. the theater in the Masonic Temple. Mm-hmm. Also, why do we... Gressel, how do you say Detroit?
Detroit.
Because I know, like, Detroit is how... I think it's supposed to be said, but we all say Detroit.
No, I would hear a lot of Detroit.
What? Detroit? Yeah, Detroit?
Like, it's like a Canadian, like Windsor.
No, like, no. I'm saying that I feel like the people who live in the city say Detroit.
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 Detroit. Yeah. No, Detroit. We say Detroit.
That's a suburbs and city thing?
Maybe. I feel like I have been criticized before for saying Detroit.
What?
People being like, you're not really from there. You said Detroit, not Detroit. But like Detroit sounds like it's taking longer for me to say.
Yeah, I think because Detroit takes longer.
I would have to think about it.
That's the Michigan Detroit. Urge to smush the all slur, the words together and slur it all together. Yeah.
Well, let us know what you think about Detroit versus Detroit and all the Italian stuff that we maybe got wrong. I don't know. Hit us up with some Italian history. Mm-hmm. That's always fun. Follow us on social media at Dead Meat James on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok.
And I'm at Carebeck, CREBECC on Twitter and Instagram. And if you want merch, deadmeatstore.com.
Also, this is the last episode of the Dead Meat podcast on this channel.
On YouTube.
So if you want to continue catching all the new podcast episodes, please subscribe to the new channel, which you can't subscribe to just yet. It's very helpful, but keep an eye out. We'll post all about it on the community post, on Twitter, we will let you know where to go. It'll probably be like a cold open on the Exorcist kill count. We will tell you where to go and subscribe to the new channel, which will be carried by the Dead Meat podcast and include every single non-kill count video we make, including the awards, the Rumble, everything. It's all going to go there. I really hope this doesn't blow up in our face and we get like 10,000 subscribers on this thing and it caps out there. That'd be awful. But I trust that the podcast audience will do the legwork to follow us there, because that's where it'll be from now on. Mm-hmm. So make sure you do that.
Great.
For real.
For real. We'll post the link when we have it. Okay.
Yes.
All right. Thank you very much. Until next time, I'm Chelsea.
I'm James. That was Gressel.
That was Gressel.
Thanks, buddy.
That's Molly.
Yeah, Molly's there too.
And this has been
the Dead Meat Podcast.